And this is KPCW. It's 8:06 on this Thursday. Happy birthday to KPCW, July 2nd, celebrating our 46th year since we signed on the air. Again, the station that Park City built. 59 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 57 degrees. We've got mostly sunny skies. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at partly cloudy skies as we go throughout the day. A weak disturbance to our west will bring in some of those clouds. Temperatures will be on the warm side. We'll climb into the upper 70s for you for this afternoon in Park City. We'll see those highs in the mid-80s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Friday, yeah, the day before the 4th of July, we're looking at mostly sunny to partly sunny skies. Temperatures, yeah, they're going to climb into the low 80s for us in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures in the mid to upper 80s in the Heber Valley. So it definitely will begin to get a little more on the toasty side. Now we got to talk about the all-important 4th of July forecast coming up on your Saturday. Hey, get ready, folks. We're going to have plenty of sunshine from start to finish. Watch out, that UV index will be in the very high category, so make sure you have that sunscreen, SPF 30 or greater, or you could burn in less than 15 minutes. And you don't want to have that happen on the 4th of July, for sure, right? Otherwise, high temperatures are going to be pretty toasty again, highs in the mid-80s. In Park City, we're going to see those high temperatures climbing into the lower 90s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Sunday, hey, we got more sunshine heading your way. So a nice holiday weekend overall. Temperatures climbing into the upper 80s to near 90 in Park City. We'll be in the mid-90s for daytime high temperatures in the Heber Valley. Let's kick off next week. We've got a big ridge of high pressure that's going to strengthen right over the Four Corners area, and that's going to bring the real heat, folks. We're talking high temperatures around 90 degrees for us in Park City for your Monday. Highs will be in the mid to upper 90s in the Heber Valley. And as we go throughout the week, it only gets hotter. So temperatures climb into the low to mid 90s for your Tuesday and Wednesday in Park City. We're forecasting highs in the upper 90s by the time we get towards the middle of the week in the Heber Valley. As far as rain chances go, they continue to look very slim and bleak out there with really not a big chance of rain over the next 7 days. That's a good look at the latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up this hour, I'll be checking in with Park City Fire District Marshal Mike Owens with an update on how we stay safe this 4th of July holiday. From the Park City Friends of Library, Kathy Lanigan and Rachel Salmon with details on this weekend's used book sale. And from the Hope Alliance, Executive Director Diane Bernhardt and International Coordinator Lisa Mosher with details on the decision to cancel this fall's trip to Uganda given the Ebola outbreak. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. This morning's guests include former Marine tech entrepreneur and author Mike LeBlanc, challenging conventional wisdom by arguing that anger, when understood and directed, can become a powerful force for resilience, leadership, and positive change. Then discover how organ-on-a-chip technology, artificial intelligence, and other cutting-edge innovations are transforming biomedical research and could dramatically reduce the need for testing on animals. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, of course, heard every Thursday from 9 to 10. Taking a look now at some local news. Summit County residents and responders both learned a lot from the 2021 Parley's Canyon fire when about 8,000 people evacuated from their homes. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports their experiences shape how they're preparing for fire this year.
This year will mark 5 years since 5,000 households evacuated in the Pinebrook and Summit Park areas during the Parley's Canyon fire. Pinebrook resident Mitzi McIntyre and her family experienced it firsthand.
I just remember texting six friends and six cars showed up, and it still chokes me up at this point. And they said, what can we get? And we took photos, the pets, the neighbor's pets, and we left, and the sheriff came around and drew a big circle at the end of our driveway, meaning, the house was empty, no one was there.
McIntyre says there were so many unknowns back then, since she'd never evacuated before. This year, as the nation's largest wildfires roll over southern Utah, she and others in her neighborhood are preparing early.
The first thing is to make sure your homeowner's insurance policy is up to date and coincides with the current value of your house, because nothing like finding out if you've lived anywhere for any part of time in Park City that what you purchased your house for and what it's probably worth now are a couple different things.
McIntyre knows now what she needs to grab at a moment's notice and has signed up for Summit County's emergency alerts. She's also thinning out brush around her home. Summit County Emergency Manager Catherine McMullen says local authorities learned a lot from the 2021 fire, too. McMullen says they'll communicate differently in the event of severe wildfires and evacuations. That means pushing out updates at regular intervals, even if there's no new information, to combat uncertainty. They're also working to diversify shelter options.
When we had 8,000 people evacuated and one person stay overnight, maybe we need some redundancies or some other options. We want to have options where people can bring their pets, where if they need that. But what does that look like? Maybe that looks like partnerships with Airbnb or short-term rentals, where people can go utilize a short-term rental versus staying in a car in a high school.
McIntyre was able to stay across Interstate 80 in Jeremy Ranch.
We went and down to the bottom of Pine Brook, and I remember seeing the big plane that drops the fire retardants come over Parley's, and I thought, the cavalry's here. Our house is going to be safe. But it was pretty, I think we were out 4 days or so, and it was pretty nail-biting.
McIntyre also recommends reaching out to neighbors regarding their travel schedules.
In 2021, my neighbor across the street was out of town, and that's probably the worst feeling, is to call your neighbor and say, I've got 10 minutes, what can I grab from your house?
This year, she says, they have a plan. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from the Park City Fire District, I have Fire Marshal Mike Owens. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start just, I mean, how would you describe the current fire danger in the Park City and Snyderville Basin area right now?
You know what? It's strange. We've had a lot of moisture over the past couple of days, so that's helped. Prior to that, though, man, I was on pins and needles. You look at the June grass, or the cheat grass, as people call it. That was browning up a lot sooner than it normally did. So we were right on the edge there for a little while. It's backed off a little bit. It's still, the fire danger is still pretty high up there, though. We're certainly not out of the woods yet.
Yeah, so with more hot, dry weather to come, I mean, it's just going to make it even more dangerous?
Absolutely, and we're getting to the point of the year where we're normally in this situation. Our big concern earlier through June was that we were at the point in June that we're normally in July. So we were looking at a much longer fire season. But now we're moving into our regular, really high-risk area. You know, don't let the moisture that we had fool you. Just look at the weather over the next week. We're looking at highs in the 90s again and getting warm.
Yeah. So how concerned are you about the potential for human-caused fires headed into the holiday weekend?
You know, I have mixed feelings about this, because I've said this just about every time you've had me here, Leslie, and our community is amazing. We're responsive. We're people do what they're supposed to do. They watch out for each other. I mean, we have an incredible community. And I would say our level of awareness is much, much higher up here than it is in other places throughout the state. So that's a great advantage. That being said, we do have a lot of people who are coming up here to recreate. And so with that, there's a little bit of danger that comes along as well.
Sure. So what are the restrictions currently in place that residents need to be aware of?
So right now, we are within, let's separate Park City Municipal from the rest of Summit County. So Park City Municipal, nothing's really changed. If you want to have a fire, you still have to have a permit for that fire pit, regardless of you know, whether it's gas or whether it's wood. Within Summit County, this is where we start talking about stage one and stage two fire restrictions. So earlier in June, we went into stage one fire restrictions. That put us in a situation where if you had any small motors, so if you're using chainsaws or if you're using motorcycles or anything like that, you have to have a spark arrestor. So, you know, that's pretty common. No smoking in wooded areas. If you had to smoke, you either had to be in a place where there was asphalt, concrete, or in your car. If you're doing any grinding or any welding or anything that's produced sparks, that was restricted. And if you wanted to have a campfire, you could have a campfire, but it had to be in an established fire pit. When we moved into the stage two fire restrictions, the biggest thing that changed is that you couldn't have campfires anymore. So if you're going out camping this weekend, the thing to be aware of is it's okay to have a gas stove, it's okay to have a pellet stove. Those are okay, but anything that's going to leave charcoal or any coals behind, you can't use those at all. Now, that being said, if you're in the National Forest, they have a few different rules, and it's always worth checking with the rangers in that area to see what the rules for that spot are.
Yeah, so are we talking fires in regulated fire pits banned?
You can't have them anymore. No, as long as those stage two restrictions are in effect, you can't have any, we call them solid fuels, so any wood or charcoal or anything like that. And that, Leslie, that includes barbecues as well.
And we know fireworks have been basically banned statewide, and yet we still have fireworks at regulated areas. I mean, Oakley Rodeo, you know, had fireworks at the rodeo last night, but they're on a big grass field in City Park there.
They did. So what the governor did, initially there was the complete firework ban, then that got backed off a little bit for any municipalities. So within unincorporated lands, so any county lands or on any state property, there were no fireworks. Those were just flat out gone. Within the cities, the individual cities could decide, or they could say, well, it's safe to shoot fireworks here. So cities throughout Utah have made those decisions. As we know, up here in Park City, fireworks were banned, you know, a couple months ago. So that's not new. We knew that was coming here. The other types of fireworks that you see are the professional fireworks shows. And that's also left to the individual cities or the fire jurisdictions to make decisions on whether or not those shows were going to be allowed in those particular areas. We've made the decision this year to restrict all of those shows, and the permits that were issued were pulled back. So there will be no fireworks shows up here this year.
Other than drone shows. So
other than drone shows,
not,
yep.
Not really fireworks, but it's a lot safer.
Yeah. They are, yep. Don't stand under them, you know?
So I guess maybe explain just why are personal fireworks so dangerous in our mountain community?
You know, there's two parts to that. And the first one is they are explosives. And it takes a little bit of common sense to be able to use them. And there's always the, hey, you know, watch this, guys, you know, those jokes. And unfortunately, those jokes do turn into actual medical incidents. So the medical side of them, they are dangerous that way. The wildfire side of them is they're not quite as controlled. So not being controlled, they get a little bit out of hand. And, you know, it's very easy to be shooting them off in places where, let me go back a few steps. When we have a permitted fireworks show, we've checked the site where the fireworks are going to be shot off. We look at the consequences of if there's a fire, what's it going to take to put that fire out? And we're able to control the situation or the scenario a lot more. When people are just out there shooting fireworks on their own, there's none of that control in place. So the consequences of a fire are generally much greater.
So does Park City Fire District have additional firefighters or resources being staged for the next few days?
We do. And not just for the next few days. We've changed our response model to anytime we have red flag warnings or anytime the weather's starting to get to the point where there may be red flag warnings, we upstaff is what we call it. So we bring in additional firefighters who are assigned specific to wildfire engines for our area. So if there's something, then we immediately have people available, no matter what else is going on. The 4th of July is a very busy weekend for us because we have, you know, we've got all these extra people in town. We've got the parade, we've got our regular calls plus the calls that the special events bring in. We don't want to deplete all of our workforce on those and not have anyone for wildfire calls. So we do bring in extra people for wildfire.
Yeah, so where do these part-time people come from?
They're us. They're our firefighters. So our firefighters bring in, they work extra shifts. Something that's really kind of neat, we've been doing this for a couple of years, is our chipping crew. They're what we call red card certified. That means you're trained to fight wildfires. And so they've been trained to fight wildfires, so we're able to use our chipping crew also if we have that need.
Okay. And the fire district has spent years encouraging residents to create defensible space around their homes. So what progress have you seen there?
It's amazing. It used to be we'd drive through a neighborhood and you just look at this, you look at a neighborhood and you think, oh man, I don't know how we're going to do this, how we're going to fight a fire in this particular place. Now we drive through neighborhoods and we see the trees have been thinned out a little bit. We've seen the underbrush removed. We've seen the space right around the people's houses. They don't have the combustible, you know, the highly combustible plants growing right next to them. It's been an incredible change.
Yeah. I guess what are the most important steps that homeowners could take right now to reduce the wildfire risk around their home? Is it too late?
Absolutely not. It's never too late. The biggest thing, and this is what we're always teaching, is it's just the little maintenance. So make sure you're looking under your deck and you don't have combustible stuff, so you don't have leaves or that sort of thing blowing up under there. Anywhere where you have leaves that have gathered around your house, that's where we worry about embers. So, you know, in a wildfire, what we're really worried about is those embers that are blowing from the fire to go somewhere else. Those embers will collect in the same place where you see leaves. So remove those leaves, clean off your roofs. It's just the little things like that that make the biggest difference.
Yeah. And in terms of the reservations remaining for the chipping program, do you have some left this summer?
You know what, Leslie, I'm really glad you asked that. Our chipping program is still wide open. We have lots of room. We'll be accepting reservations into the first week or two of September. Usually we make a call right around Labor Day to decide when we have to shut those off. But a lot of people are using old links. So, you know, last year they'll have gone to our website and they'll have bookmarked the link. And so we're getting reports that people they're saying, hey, your chipping program is closed. Well, they're looking at the old registration form. We've changed our website. It's pcfdut.gov. So we changed to a .gov website. And if people just go to that pcfdut.gov, they can register right there. This program will run through September.
Okay. What other resources are available for homeowners who kind of want to, what they call, harden their homes against wildfire?
The biggest one is education. So one of the programs that we offer, and again, you can sign up for this right on the front page of our website, is we'll come out to your house, we'll walk around your house, and not just give you a bunch of things that this is what people should do to harden their homes. We'll talk to you about what you can do to harden your homes. We'll talk about your roof. We'll talk about the plants that you have. We'll talk about your landscaping and what you can do specific to your house. That's the biggest program that we offer. That's available in both Park City itself and within the Park City Fire District outside of the Park City boundaries.
So do people, call, email? I mean, how do they make that, schedule that?
Right on our website, there's a big red button. So okay. I'm going to say it again. I sound like, you know, pcfdut.gov, right? Just go right there to our website, scroll down below the picture of the fire engine. There's a button right on the right-hand side.
Okay, and is that separate if you live within the city boundaries?
Yeah, so if you live within the city boundaries, Park City Municipal has, they have their own group of people that do that. And that's good because there's a few special rules that Park City has to deal with when it comes to trimming trees or planting trees or removing trees. And so they're able to get you down that process a lot faster.
Yeah, now, so if you do notice some things around the house, I mean, are people then obligated to remove those, or is it just a suggestion base?
No, and this is one of the best ways, the best things about the way the program is set up is this is not an inspection. This is simply an assessment. And we'll give you a list, like I said, of things specific to your house. But if you don't do them, it's entirely up to you. So yeah, there's no penalty for not doing them. There's no fines or anything like that. It's come out, let's talk for about 45 minutes and yeah.
Okay, so it's not going to be the insurance company say, well, they told you to do this, so we're not covering it?
No, Leslie, I'll tell you, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod sort of thing is we don't even keep a record of it happening.
Okay.
So.
All right. Any specific neighborhoods? I mean, it's, to me, Summit Park comes to mind, but neighborhoods where residents should be especially vigilant because of the vegetation?
So you mentioned Summit Park, and Summit Park kind of gets a bad rap because they're in heavy timber, they have narrow roads, there's not a lot of ways in and out of that community. I think that it's really worth saying, yes, there's things that Summit Park needs to do, but there's also things that we all need to do. And there's this concept in wildfire preparedness where if we all do a little bit, then we end up with a very big area that's prepared. So individual neighborhoods, it's kind of hard to identify and say, this one's not doing a good job. The work that's being done in Summit Park is pretty amazing. Our chipping program, about 30% of the piles that get registered for chipping come out of Summit Park. So they're doing a lot of work over there. But you know what? About 30% of the piles that get registered also come out of Jeremy Ranch. So that's, you know, kind of interesting statistics. And then the rest of our district takes up that remaining 40%. So yeah, it's every neighborhood can do something.
Yeah, and I know that the fire district was requesting some grant money to continue with its chipping program.
We're looking to expand it, and we're very happy to announce we did get that. So we were able to receive some grant money that's going to allow us to purchase another chipper. Now, one of the programs that we set up for this year is we have wildland, we have dedicated wildland crews. And those crews serve two purposes. So when we're at high fire danger, they're going to be here in the Park City area. But when we're not right at the highest risk, we can send them out to other fires throughout the state and throughout the Western United States. It's a source of revenue for the fire district. It's incredible experience for the firefighters that are doing this. But while they're here, to give them things to do, fuel mitigation has been at the top of our list. So we're going to be able to work with HOAs. We're going to be able to work with larger landowners to help them get rid of some of these fuels through chipping. So we are getting a new chipper, and we're going to be able to expand our program. Right now, we're just doing single-family residences. We'll be able to increase that.
Okay. And do you have any firefighters down south helping to fight fires? Or?
We did. They just got back. Yep. So they are limited in the number of days, consecutive days, that they can serve before they have to come back home and rest up a little bit before they go out. So yes, we did. We had two crews down there, and now they're back home.
Okay. Anything else, Mike, you wanted to mention?
You know, it's a beautiful day out there today. This weekend is going to be great. We just ask people to use a little common sense as you have a good time. Watch out for those fire restrictions, and, you know, have fun. Happy 4th of July. Go Team USA.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Leslie.
Mike Owens is the fire marshal for Park City Fire District. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Friends of the Park City Library used book sale will be held for 2 days this week. And in the studio with details, I have two members of the Friends, Rachel Salmon and Kathy Lanigan. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Kathy, you want to start and tell us just, you know, the sales for 2 days? Give us the days and hours.
Yeah, come join us. We open for members tomorrow, July 3rd at 8 a.m. Lucky Ones will also be open, so come on in, get your coffee, come on upstairs. If you're a member, you can purchase a membership at the door if you need to. And then we go till 4 p.m., that's tomorrow the 3rd, and then on the 4th we're open from 10 till 4.
Okay, and this is all on the 3rd floor?
That's correct,
Park
yes.
City Library?
Yes, on the 3rd floor.
Okay, so Rachel, the library itself is closed on July 4th, but
yes.
The book sale's open.
Book sale will be on, Lucky Ones will be open. And when we talk about membership, anyone in the community can become a member of the Park City Library, Friends of the Library. So what that does is when people become members and give us an annual membership donation, we have kind of a reliable and predictable source of income for supporting library programs. So that's what kind of when we talk about membership, it's nothing exclusive. We welcome all, and we really like to have folks on our membership list. They get emails from us and special membership events and so forth. So that's what will be happening. That's one of the special things is tomorrow morning from 8 to 10, they can preview the book sale before the general public.
Okay, the cost of a membership is what?
We ask $25 to start, and then anywhere from there. It's really whatever someone feels like giving and can give. We appreciate all the donations that we get from our members.
Okay, so any idea how many books you have for sale?
Thousands. In fact, this morning, our board and a bunch of community volunteers will be moving all those books into the sale area, and it takes 10 people about 2 hours to move all those books. So by scale, that gives you an idea, but it's thousands.
Yeah, where are all the books stored?
We call it the bomb shelter, affectionately. It's a teeny tiny windowless room behind the mechanical room on the bottom of the library.
Okay. Yeah, so some work to do.
Yeah.
But you'll be ready again at 8 a.m. tomorrow.
That's right.
Talk to us a little bit about how you price these used books.
So all children's books are $1. We actually have a separate children's room, so kids can go in there and choose whatever books. Each is $1. Puzzles and games are $2. We've actually gotten a lot of nice puzzles and games over the past few years, so we have an area for those. Adult paperbacks are $2, and adult hardcover are $3.
Okay, so basically the same prices that you have inside in your Friends Corner in the library.
Yes,
that you
that's
sell.
Exactly right.
Yeah. And then you also have something new this year, what you're calling the collections category?
Yes. So over the years, we've taken donations from the community, and occasionally somebody will move out of the state and they clean out their entire collection. We have discovered some really interesting books, some first edition, signed, you know, from 1910 or something. And we've done some research. Some people on the board went and looked at what these are really worth. we have some that are worth hundreds of dollars. And so while we're sorting, we cull those will be $5.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Why don't you just sell them yourself and get the $100?
There is a limit to how much time our board has, and it requires traveling down to Salt Lake City, and, you know, sometimes they're worth $500, sometimes they're worth $20. This is easier, and also, I think that's kind of the fun of a library used book sale, is you never know what you're going to find on your treasure hunt.
Yeah. Now, do you get a lot of kind of resale book sellers buying the membership so that they can check that out first?
We do, Leslie, although fewer than we used to. We have a reliable group of about four that we recognize them. They come every year. Used to be quite a few more, so not sure why the change, but yes, we do.
Okay, and you also have what you're calling your tote bag happy hour.
We do. That's the end of the book sale for the last 2 hours. So on July 4th from 2 to 4, our visitors can get a $15 tote bag and fill that tote bag with as many books as they can fit. So that is a great opportunity for folks who want to get a lot of books. It's great for us because the few books that are left at the end, the more that we can have go to our members and friends, then we really like to get those books out.
Yeah. So. And do you put books back where you've stored them, or you just get rid of all of them for 4th of July?
For the 4th of July sale, we resort them and restore them, and then we use them for the Miner's Day used book sale. We're doing the two, and we're pretty much sticking with that. So,
okay.
We need enough to make sure there's enough to sell for Miner's Day.
We also do take over the next 2 months all of the donations that come in, and we've had a really robust donation year, so I'm expecting that will probably continue. So we will have some of the books from the July 4th sale left, but we'll have a lot of new books as well once the Miner's Day sale comes around.
All right.
I should also mention on the community donations, the Summit County Kimball branch no longer takes donations, and they have signage everywhere saying send them to us. So.
Awesome. Yeah. Because they're moving them too. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, talk to us a little bit about some of the what you've done with the book sale proceeds, the membership
Absolutely.
Fees that you've collected.
Yeah, we're really excited. This year we were able to support through the proceeds from book sales. In the children's area, there are terminals that support ongoing educational learning for children anywhere up to sixth grade. And these are terminals that are completely safe, but have reading programs, math programs, language programs, puzzle programs. And so it's a safe way for kids to continue their learning, but also maybe learn some keyboarding skills. There's no internet. That's the only program on these terminals, so it's very safe.
Okay, and that's in the children's area?
It's in the children's area, so that's one big thing we funded this year. We're also supporting both the One Book, One Community program, and we're also supporting the Utah Humanities Wasatch Back author keynote. That'll be in October. So those are some programs we're funding.
And then we have additional dollars that we are allotting to supplement the library's e-books. Those have become very, very popular, and so the additional dollars from the Friends allows the increased availability and reducing hold and wait times on those books, so we supplement the library's budget there. Also with graphic novels, which those are really popular with the youth and teen population, so our dollars help to supplement that. Those books, and they get turn over very quickly. They get used a lot, so they need to be added to. And then we actually funded the library staff going to the Utah Library Association annual conference this past May. So again, just really looking at a diverse amount of funding into a lot of different audiences. So our teen population, our children, some of our Spanish language programs, and so forth. So.
Okay, and the One Book, One Community, what was it, As a River Runs? Or
it's Go As a River by Shelley Reed, and the author will be coming July 30th. I should mention that we fund that, we split it with the Summit County Friends, But for members of either Friends, there'll be a member reception to meet the author ahead of the keynote speak July 30th. So.
Okay, it was a great book. Good choice.
Yeah.
And again, people can, there's lots of copies at the library, or for those on Libby can download it and get it right away. No wait list.
No wait list. I just downloaded it. I was a little behind, so I just downloaded it last week, and I'm about halfway through already, so it's fantastic.
All right. And then you mentioned the October Utah Humanities Council. Tell me what's going to happen there.
So for the past several years, Adrienne Herrick-Juarez and her staff, she's the executive director of Park City Library, they have put together a really robust series of activities and programming for that weekend. It's the State of Utah Humanities Book Festival, and they always, for this library, they have a keynote speaker, and that's been funded but not announced, so I can't say the name of it yet. But yeah, so that's in October.
Well, last year it was, I think, Kevin Fidarko.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah, which was really exciting.
Very exciting. Okay, any other events that you wanted to mention other than...
No, we've got the, like we say, the July 4th book sale, and then Miners will be following in early September. And anything else, Kathy?
Well, for the Spanish-speaking part of the community, one thing we funded this year is the Movies on the Field. We've now funded the licensing for some Spanish-language movies.
Great. So. Do you need any volunteers for the book sale?
We are pretty full up at this point, but if you go to our website, we'll have a link to volunteer. At this point, it's, I have to be honest, just clean up. Nothing sexy.
Okay. All right. Kathy and Rachel, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you,
Leslie.
A big happy birthday to KPCW today. So congratulations. Yeah. Great station.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's Rachel Solomon and Kathy Lanigan with Park City Friends of the Library. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, Park City will mark the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence with Forum Fest. The free event begins today at 4 o'clock. It's the fifth annual Forum Fest at Canyons Village, and it features 3 days of live music, food, drinks, and family-friendly activities. Because of extreme fire danger and Summit County fire restrictions, fireworks have been canceled. Instead, a drone show with some 500 illuminated drones will launch each night at 10:15 p.m. Debbie LaBelle, Public Relations and Communications Director for the Canyons Village Management Association, which sponsors the event, says that there is something for everyone.
We have morning yoga, we have mechanical bull riding, axe throwing, air archery, mini golf. We have a golf simulator this year. Of course, we have the Nuzzles and Company puppy pit, as we normally do. And then just a lot of things around there for kids, face painting, a juggler, magician walking around, balloon tying. We also have some new things this year. We have the Freedom 5K race. We have a super fun pie eating contest, a costume contest, and silent disco.
Live music begins each day at 4 o'clock in the Forum Amphitheater.
For the first night, we have kind of 80s night. We have Breakfast Club and Shuffle. And they're kind of 80s, 90s, and 2000s. The second night is Tribute Night. We have a band called Queen Nation. They're the most amazing Queen tribute band. And then we have a band called Red Hot Tribute. And they're also amazing Red Hot Chili Peppers band. And then the third night is Country Night. We have a local band called Jaegertown. And then we have the Rough Riders.
In addition to the restaurants at the base of the resort, LaBelle says that several food trucks will be on site for quick bites. And for the first time, John Simmons, the Association's Director of Planning and Operations, says CVMA will host a 5K fun run.
On July 3rd at 9 a.m., we'll have our first annual Freedom Fest 5K. It's going to be a fun, unique course for all ability levels. We start and end in the Canyons Village Amphitheater, so kind of a unique experience there. It'll traverse through the Forum, through some of the village neighborhoods, and then come back around and finish right back in the amphitheater. Race sign-up is now, and you can also register day of from 8 to 8:45 a.m. Race kicks off at 9.
The cost is $25, and it includes free coffee and donuts and a t-shirt. You can register online at forumfest.com. The first ever pie-eating contest will be held Saturday at 4:30. No pre-registration is required. Spots are on a first-come, first-served basis. And because of construction in the lower parking lot, carpools of four more may park in the upper lots. Others should plan to walk, ride the bus, or bike. Additional shuttles will run from the transit hub near 7-Eleven. Simmons says that Summit County Bike Share will also add a pop-up bike share parking station in Lot 4. Due to the Ebola outbreak in Africa, the Hope Alliance will not be traveling to its planned outreach clinics in Uganda this fall. In the studio with details, I have Executive Director Diane Bernhardt along with International Coordinator for Hope Alliance, Lisa Mosher. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Diane, maybe with for those who may not be familiar with Hope Alliance, tell us about the organization's mission and the work you do locally and internationally.
Okay, Hope Alliance was born in Park City in 1998. And when we started, we primarily, well, we were doing a number of things. We were doing medical care, dental care, vision care, and basic needs such as clean water, sewer, sewage care. At some point before my tenure, they focused in on vision care, which I think was probably around 2014, and we've been focusing on that ever since. We provide care, vision care, eye exams, and glasses, For people who don't have access, and that might mean something different in the United States versus what that means in Uganda. And so we serve now here in Utah, including southern Utah. We also serve in Mexico, Guatemala, Uganda, and we have served in Tanzania recently. That's pretty much sums it up.
Yeah. So how long have you been involved in Uganda then? And I guess what kind of partnerships have you established there?
I think the first trip to Uganda was in 2017. And then, Leslie, you and I went together in 2018. So we've been going since then, although we did have a break for COVID.
Yeah, so why has Uganda become such an important focus for your international outreach efforts?
So I don't know if you remember Stacy Lippert and her husband John. They became quite involved with the mission in Uganda several years before Hope Alliance became involved with it. There was the beginnings of a hospital, a community hospital in a rural area, and so it's just kind of blossomed since then, and Stacy Lippert has really been an integral part of our activities there. So that's who drew us in.
Okay, so there's that Bawindi Community Hospital there, kind of like in guerrilla country.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And with that establishment, I think it's a training hospital as well, so
yes.
Yes,
it began as a very small, just medical care under a tree with Dr. Scott Kellerman, who's from California. And then it grew from there. It started as a small community hospital, and it's just exploded. So now it's a university hospital. It's a teaching hospital. And specifically, there is recent developments. There's a dental clinic, a specific dental clinic, as well as a vision clinic. The dental clinic is up and running, but one of our objectives for the trip that was supposed to be now was to train the clinicians there more specifically for optometric care and get that clinic up and running. And so while the locals are still working towards that end, we don't have a direct hand in it at this point in time.
All right, well, talk a little bit about the decision then, Diane, in terms of foregoing your service trip to Uganda. Of course, we know about the Ebola outbreak. I'm not sure how widespread it is in Uganda, but it's certainly in other countries.
So Uganda borders the Congo, and the genesis of this outbreak was the Congo. It's going to be complicated because there's a controlling faction called M23, and so it's difficult for the government as it stands to fight it in any organized way. So while it's still I don't know if rampant's the right word, it's still very active and uncontrolled in the Congo, it exists also in Uganda. It's a little bit more controlled, but the idea of taking a group of people to Uganda during an Ebola outbreak, especially when it's been very flexible. The U.S. government's had a very changeable approach to how you leave the country and how we would re-enter the country, and it's just not responsible at this time. And I also feel as though if we could help them with Ebola, it would be responsible for us to go. But if we can't, we're just adding extra complication.
Yeah, and I'm guessing, I mean, how was that received then by the volunteers that you had signed up for the trip?
So we contacted the group early on, letting them know that we were aware of the situation and that we were going to watch it closely. And then, so Diane and I were talking several times a day, oh, what should we do? What should we do? How is this responsible? Is it irresponsible? And then just late one evening, something clicked and we said, oh, we gotta cancel it. So we emailed everyone and everyone got on the phone with the airlines, and thankfully everyone was able to get refunded for their airfare. We do still have some payments that they're holding for us until our next trip.
Okay, and so you do hope that would return next year then?
Yes, at the same time, that's our plan at this point. Hopefully Ebola will be behind them.
Yeah. Even without the trip, I mean, are there other ways you can support the folks in Uganda?
Yes, we have regular meetings with the folks in Uganda. There are two clinicians there, and we have a couple of doctors here who are very invested in it. And so we get on with them. We, via FaceTime, talk about placement of equipment, about different approaches for care. And shortly, there will be a newly trained ophthalmologist who's just graduating or just finishing her residency, and she's bonded to the hospital because they paid for her education, and she's will be arriving sometime in July. So we were really looking forward to the opportunity to all be together. So there's advancement will still continue,
right.
And we will be supporting them. It just won't be with our physical presence.
Yeah, so ophthalmology, is that the surgeon?
Yes.
Right, because yep. As I recall, when Lisa and I were there, it was so many of the patients had cataracts, right? And there was nothing, optometry, glasses weren't going to help at all.
Yeah, exactly. So. And it's really a great marriage when you have optometry and ophthalmology together, because if a person has an opportunity to try to fix their refractive error, you know, if they need glasses to get them, it helps them better decide, do I want to actually have surgery? Or should I just hold for a while and see how this cataract develops?
Yeah. Okay, so that should be getting underway.
Yes.
In the meantime, I mean, I know you've also done lots of trips to Guatemala. Will those continue at all?
Yes. So we're contemplating an earlier trip to Guatemala. We were there in March. If we can get enough doctors to commit to an earlier date, then we'll try and put a team together for another trip this year. But that's still kind of up in the air.
All right. And I guess in the meantime, I mean, you continue with your work here in Utah, and you've got several vision clinics scheduled. Are these for anyone?
So we have two permanent clinics in Utah. We have one here embedded within the People's Health Clinic, and we have another one embedded within the Moab Free Health Clinic, sort of a sister clinic. And so we continue to do that sort of service that's in our permanent clinics, but we are also expanding our services through outreach clinics and pop-up clinics. Not sure that answered your question.
Yeah, but I think you had some dates set.
Oh, yes, we do. We typically serve at the People's Health Clinic on the third Fridays each month. We had such high demand, we had a long wait list, and so we added additional clinics at People's Health Clinic to resolve that wait list. We also then in the fall, we do vision clinics at each of our local schools, and we do vision clinics also at the Grand County School District. We typically serve, generally speaking, in Moab at our clinic there four times a year for three-day vision camps.
Yeah, it was interesting. I read somewhere, maybe it was on the website, where you do test, every child in Park City School District that you think needs it, or just everybody gets tested?
Oh, so how it works in the school districts is that the legislature has said that school districts, the nurses there, must test distance vision on all the kids. It's not every year, it's K1, 3, 5, 7, every other year. So when the school nurses do that, they also work with the outreach coordinators that in Park City, every school has one, to identify students who have visual needs, you know, visual problems affecting their school work. And they also then work with the outreach coordinators to understand which of those students don't have access to care through their family medical services, or their family doesn't have the ability to get them to the doctor, or they don't have the funds to provide that for their family. So we do that. We come in that. So we don't do all the screenings. Mm-hmm. We do, when we come, we are doing eye exams and giving glasses.
Okay, and how many kids actually needed glasses?
So in Utah this year, we served 296 students. We also did some vision screenings, especially for those students who really have trouble using the eye chart. We have devices that we could use that if they can't speak or if they're excessively shy, we can just shine a device right in their eye and we can figure out whether they need care. So we found, of those 296 students, 81 of them had never had an eye exam. Some of them with really severe.
And it sounds like you hope to expand that service both to North and South Summit School Districts?
Yes, we would love to. And we are expanding it into the Bookcliffs Elementary School. What's really fabulous about the state of Utah is when there's need, the communities, especially in the remote communities, they really work together to help one another. So the school nurse that we've been working with for 5 years, who's like, she should wear angel wings, she's that kind of person. She called the nurse who works 90 miles away from the school, so never really gets there. And so we're going to combine schools and work with them together.
Okay. What else are you working on?
We realize that there is an unbelievable amount of need, globally certainly, and also in Utah. And the notion of trying to take doctors to remote places as far away as Uganda or as far away as Bernal, you know, it's challenging. So what we're trying to do is come up with more efficient ways using technology to make the process faster so we could see more patients. Also make it so it's less error prone, and to see if we could connect doctors to patients while they're not together with some technology solutions.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems really exciting.
All right. Yeah. So is that something the Hope Alliance is funding then?
Yes, well, based with funding from our community, yes.
Okay. Yes. All right. Anything else you guys want to mention? I guess if somebody is interested in joining you on one of the international tours.
Sure. Yeah. We don't have specific dates for any trips at this point, but we are working on a few. And if someone is interested, they can take a look at the newsletter or the website, excuse me, or contact me specifically. It's lisam@thehopealliance.org. But once we get some dates together, then it will be easier to pull a team.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And Diane, any parting words?
No, I just really appreciate this community for all the support they've provided Hope Alliance.
Okay. Diane Bernhardt, Lisa Mosher, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
With wildfires raging across Utah and other parts of the U.S., municipalities are turning to drone shows rather than fireworks, including right here in Park City. KPCW's Christine Weller has more on that.
Wildfires have burned almost 312 acres in the Beehive State so far this year, according to Utah Fire Info. Utah Governor Spencer Cox declared a state of emergency June 25th because of the wildfire risk, placing a temporary prohibition on fireworks throughout the state. Municipalities can still okay certain areas for fireworks, but pyrotechnics have been banned across the Wasatch Back. With the 4th of July holiday this weekend, Scott Linzer says his Skyworks drone shows company has seen an influx of requests.
I've never seen a higher demand for drones or drone shows like I've seen this year.
Skyworks launched 7 years ago and puts on 200 shows annually, ranging from music festivals and gender reveal parties to the Super Bowl. The company has replaced Park City's July 4 fireworks show for the last few years to prevent fires.
Fireworks in drought conditions or in arid conditions really cause an issue.
According to the National Fire Protection Association, fireworks cause around 19,500 fires each year and thousands of injuries. They also scare birds from roosting and nesting sites, can affect animal breeding, and contribute to soil, water, and air pollution, a 2023 study published in the Pacific Conservation Biology Journal shows. Linzer said drones, on the other hand, are more eco-friendly, safer, and can't be heard from miles away. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And remember, we've got a number of closures due to the holiday, especially those you're looking for something to imbibe. The rule is if you want a fifth for the fourth, make sure you get it by the third. Also, the Summit Wasatch County Library branches will be closing Friday and reopening Monday, July 6th. The Park City Library will close early Friday, reopening Sunday. Park City Mark is open July 4th with adjusted hours. Basin Recreation Fieldhouse will be closed. Friday trash collection in Summit County won't be delayed. Friday trash collection in Wasatch County will be delayed until Monday. Again, state liquor stores are closed Saturday for the holiday and will reopen Monday along with the U.S. post offices. No mail will be delivered on Saturday. This is KPCW Park City.